Okay, this year, Parshas Nitzavim is not a Shabbat Shuvah, and therefore it's not the Haftorah for Shabbat Shuvah. It is instead a section from Sefer Yeshaya. It is the closing part of the Shivta Nechemta. It was the final section of that. And that fact of it not being, of it being Nitzavim and not being together with Vayelech is itself interesting. And just to start with a comment about that, so there is a Masorah that the Sefer Eshkol mentions, and it's consistent with an idea that Vilna Gaon expressed, that Nitzavim Vayelech is actually one Parsha. It actually creates one entity, and it's counted as one according to the Cheshbon of the Vilna Gaon. So that makes it all the more surprising when you have a year where they're split up. So as it is, you have two short parshios. You could argue that maybe this is our Klal Yisrael's attempt to give us a last chus with Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum right before the year starts. So, you know, if you've struggled throughout the year to get Shnei Mikra done, so here, okay, this one you can get. You know, hopefully you can at least manage that. But it seems like we're really cutting things very thin by dividing up Nitzavim Vayelech, and it seems like an unusual choice. Why would we stagger the parshios that way when, again, it makes for a very short parshios, and especially if we have this Masorah that Nitzavim Vayelech are one and really shouldn't be split. So this is discussed in Tosus. Tosus in Bava Basra and Daf Peches and Mibbeis has two perspectives on this that revolve around the same point, that Rav Nissim Gaon is quoted and argued on, that the reason we have the Kriyas HaTorah the way we have it is because we want Nitzavim to always be before Rosh Hashanah, because there are klolos in it, and we have this idea of Tachel Shana V'Kiloseh, that let the year end and take with it all of its klolos. So Tosfos themselves, three in Tosfos, disagrees with this. Not with the starting point, but with the application. Because the maintains that the klolos are specifically a reference to the Chukosai and Kisavo, and Nitzavim does not qualify as klolos. So Nitzavim is something else. So therefore, it's the same point but basically tweaking it. It says it's still because of this idea of Tichel Hashanah V'Kil Osah, but the idea is we want to be mafsik between the klolos and Rosh Hashanah. So the first opinion is that we just want to get the klolos in before Rosh Hashanah and start the year afresh. And the opinion of Tosfos, of Rian Tosfos, is that we want to be mafsik between the klolos of last week and Rosh Hashanah. So it's an interesting idea, and in the Paras Yosef HaChadosh, he quotes a notion from Rabbi Yitzchak Fleshker. Rabbi Yitzchak Fleshker is the Ger HaShiva, the author of the Sefer Shari Yitzchak, and he pointed out that the message here is that this idea of the klolos ending in the previous year and not carrying over to the next year, it's not magic. It doesn't happen automatically. It happens because of something. And what is that something? That something is the Achdus. So therefore, we need to insert between the Klolos and the New Year, we need to insert Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kuchem. That's the idea of all of the Jews gathered together in all of their diversity, in all of their range of professions and perspectives. They're all needed for Klal Yisrael, and it's that that affects this change. So it's not automatic, but because we come together that way, that's where we are able to bring about this shift and bring about the year of bracha. Rav Nosson Gishtetner and the Lahoros Nosson on Chumash uses a similar idea to point out that later on in the parasha we talk negatively about someone who says ki b'shirus lebo, he says ki b'shirus lebi eleich, I will go and do whatever I want, And I say, Shalom alai nafshi. I say, everything will be fine. That's how the pasuk goes. So, Rav Nassim Gestetner comments that the message is that the Torah is addressing somebody who thinks, okay, I can just do whatever I want, and it's okay, because I know that Shalom is Mechaper, so I'll say, Shalom alai nafshi, I'll invoke Shalom, I'll be friendly with people, I'll be peaceful, and that will bring about a coverage of whatever I do wrong. So he knows it doesn't work that way. This is not meant to be cynically manipulated for a get out of jail free card, but that when there is a genuine achdus and we are actually able to appreciate what the others contribute to the picture and why we need them, so then that's what brings us from a stage of klala to bracha. The Netziv, in his commentary here, points out, perhaps also a relevant nekuda, that really the beginning of Nitzavim should be part of the previous parsha, part of Kisavo, that it is the break from the Tocha. It's what calms us down a little bit and gives us the positive aspect to the Tocha, but we have it separated as a distinct parsha, because it's also important not in the context of the Tocha. So we don't want the message, the way the Netziv understood it, to only come as a epilogue to the Tocha, but also to stand on its own. So that's how the Parsha is broken up the way it is. And that's also relevant to the placement of things. Okay, so in any event, so that brings us to the Haftarah. I think this week, in the interest of time, we want to talk about Rosh Hashanah as well. We won't go pasuk by pasuk, but I'll just highlight some of the themes that you find in this Haftarah. Rav Rivlin Shlita, I mentioned Rav Rivlin is the Mashkiach for many years in Karen B'Avna, so in his Sefer on the Haftarahs, Rav Rivlin notes that there are connections between this Haftarah and the time of year, that it's not simply the idea that we are finishing off the Shiva Dinechemta, and this is number 7, but it also sets us up for Rosh Hashanah, and he points out that towards the end we have the Pasuk Shnas Ge'uli Ba, that's in Parak Samach Gimel, Pasuk Dalet, that we say that the year of my redemption is coming, and we want that to be this year. So as a bracha for Rosh Hashanah, it's an appropriate message. And he notes also that the more negative sounding ideas that we're going to clear out all of the enemies of the Jewish people, that's relevant to the notion of Malchus, that everything that contradicts HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus, that is going to be eliminated to pave the way for the full recognition of the Malchus of Hashem. So just to highlight a few distinct psukim, because it's in three prakim, I have to keep back and forth. So the first pasuk begins, pasuk Yud, and Samach Aleph, Sosa Sis B'Hashem, a very positive way of starting. I will rejoice in God. Tagel Nafshi B'Lokai, my soul is going to be joyful in my God. Ki Hil Bishani B'Gdayesha, because he has clothed me with garments of salvation. Yaakov Ishaya Bloy, who wrote many important Sifrei Halacha, I believe he has a sefer on shatnez with his title, Big Day Esha. So that means the non-shatnez clothing is the Big Day Esha. Mi'il Tzedaka, it's another sefer title. It's always enjoyable to look at for his foreign titles as you read the words of the Nevi'im. So here's two in a row. Mi'il Tzedaka is the sefer of Shas and Chuvas. Ya'atani, so the garment of righteousness, the robe of righteousness that has covered me. Kechasan yechayin peher uchakala ta'adek cheleha. So just like a groom puts on a garland and a kala puts on jewels. So we have maybe two types of imagery in this pasuk. One is the imagery of clothing and being adorned in clothing. This is something that Rabbi Kenny Brander wrote an article about in the Mitoch Ohel on the Haftarahs. The notion that the clothing represents the kind of identity we want to take on, the kind of purpose we want to take on. And that fits the theme of this Haftorah, that we're essentially saying that we're ready to embrace the role of redeemed. The whole back and forth of the seven Haftorahs, you see in their content, we only just picked up from the last two here, but there is a whole back and forth of Nachamu, Nachamu, we should be comforted, and we refuse to be comforted, we think we're not able to be comforted, etc., etc., and the message goes back and forth until now, where we say, okay, we're stepping into it, we are owning it, and the clothing has that imagery. But also the repeated imagery throughout the Haftarah that starts here of chasen and kala, of bride and groom. So that clearly is meant to evoke something very happy and celebratory. But the Malbim points out also that the language we find here about a psula and a bachar, that it's specifically the imagery of a first marriage, of one who is starting a marriage anew, and that the imagery you might expect here of a couple that had been married and then had separated and now come back to each other. So that's what you might expect in terms of Galus and Geula, but the imagery is pointedly Bachar, Psula, the first stirrings of marriage where there is all of the excitement and all of the joy and no negative history. So the message seems to be that that's what it's going to be like, that despite how you would have thought that's not the proper mashal, but ultimately the joy of this reunion is going to be so great, it's going to be like the initial marriage of the couple, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of celebration that accompanies it. To skip down a little bit to the beginning of Perek Samach Beis, so there is a well-known pasuk that begins here. We say, L'man Sion lo echesheh, Uleman Yerushalayim lo eshkot. So I will not hold my peace regarding Zion, and I won't be quiet about Yerushalayim. Ad yeseh chanoga tzidka v'shuasak lapid yivar, until their righteousness goes forth with a radiance, and so Yeshua, salvation, is going to burn like a torch. So this is a very well-known, often quoted pasuk. I remember hearing once that once in Gush, in Yom HaAtzmaut, I think Rav Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, was not feeling well, and he had the laryngitis, couldn't really talk, but he got up to speak anyway, even though it was hard for him to speak, and he started with these words, L'man Zion lo echesheh, L'man Yerushalayim lo eshkot, that I can't hold back to talk about Zion and Yerushalayim on this occasion. And the message is clear in the broader sense that we have to speak up on behalf of Sion and Yerushalayim, and we find that to be, of course, an ongoing challenge, that there is always a need to speak up and to defend both the righteousness and the importance of Yerushalayim and Sion. And these psukim here talk about Yerushalayim as a focal point for us, and the nations of the world also have always directed their attention, and it really is an unbelievable thing to watch how we know this plays out so prominently in our own current events here in 2018, and just what we've seen in the past few months. Yerushalayim is always the point of attention, and the Metzudas David comments here that this is going to be an extracting of the comma on the nations that have fought us on this point. And there's always been a struggle for Yerushalayim. The Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim that even though the Tanakh has hundreds and hundreds, more than 600 references to Yerushalayim, but none of those are in Chumash. The Chumash doesn't identify Yerushalayim specifically. You have instead the references to Amakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, things like that. We don't have the actual name. And the Rambam, or Rabbeinu Bachi as well, have a few reasons why they think that is, why the Torah didn't identify the city. And one of the points the Rambam makes in the Mor Nevuchim is that if the Torah was going to point out what city it was that was so important, it would be even more a subject of attention in a bad way from the nations of the world, either that they would want it for themselves or they would want to turn it into a place of idolatry, kick the Jews out, whatever it is. And we know that this has indeed been the point of attention, and that hasn't always helped us. So there is another famous pasuk we know from the song and from elsewhere. Pasuk Vav, Al Chamosayich Yerushalayim, Hifgadeti Shomrim, Kol Yom V'Chol HaLayla, that they have set watchmen, Shomrim, guards on the walls of Yerushalayim all day and all night. Tamid lo yechshu. There's that word again. They're not going to hold back. Hamazkirim es Hashem al dami lachem. So they make mention of Hashem, and they should not rest. So who are these shomrim? So Rashi and the Radak say, based on the Gemara in Menachos, that these are malachim. These are angels who are there, so to speak, to remind God about the Churban so that it should be rebuilt. And the Radak also has another interpretation that this is the Avelei Tzion Yerushalayim. These are human beings who are there mourning and crying and calling attention. And the Malbim writes that it's the Nevi'im and the Tzadikim of every generation who always made sure that Yerushalayim should be at the forefront of our attention. And as pointed out in the Sefer Yonim Baparsha, that this is an appropriate note to end the Shiva D'Nechemta, because it brings us to the reminder that we want a complete Geula, that however far along the process we've gotten, but we need to keep the memory alive, we need to keep the focus on the exile and the need to restore Yerushalayim. So the fact that that will ultimately bring about the Geula is a positive note for us to close on. And as Rav Rivlin points out, that the Kuzri, Yehuda Levi was famous for his tshuka towards Eretz Yisrael, so the Kuzri ends on this note also, that Yerushalayim will be rebuilt when we have such a yearning for it and such a obsession, so to speak, with returning, that it inhabits the stones and the walls. So then we will creep all black to Yerushalayim. And the last pasuk of the Haftorah, the last pasuk of the Haftorah has a very important message as well. That is Parak Samach Gimel, Pasuk Yud, and this is something that is crucial for us also. Pasuk says, V'chol tzarasam lo tzar. So throughout all of the tzaras of the Jewish people, lo tzar. What does that mean, lo tzar? So it sounds like it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not afflicted. But there's a kriya ksiv here, and we're told that even though the ksiv is lo lamed aleph, but the kri is lamed vav. It's an anguish for him. Not that he's not anguished, but that he is anguished. Essentially, it seems like an opposite meaning, that it is a source of anguish for him. This is how the Gemara in Maseches Sot on the lamed aleph mid aleph indicates. The message really is a point that Rav Rivlin emphasizes in his Sefer, that as opposed to other positive messages that tell us it's going to be good, there's going to be a Yeshua, there's going to be a Geula, here this is saying more than that. This is saying that right now he is with us, and that even in the dark times when we think we are alone and we think we are separate from his presence, he's here too, that he is also with us in the suffering. And that's a crucially vital message. As Rav Rivlin notes, so that actually brings the Kri and the Ksiv together, because due to the fact of the Lamed Vav, the Lo Tzar, so there is some truth to Lamed Aleph Tzar, that it's not really an affliction for us, because we feel that God is still there with us, and that's a tremendous nechama, and that's supposed to go both ways. And that, as he notes, so that's the theme of Ani L'Dodi, L'Dodi Li, of Elul, that we are meant to feel his presence, and now we're approaching the Aser Shemei Tshuva, Dirshu Hashem B'Matzo, Kerubah Yisokarov, that God is close to us, and that awareness will uplift us. That awareness is even more immediate than the notion of the most positive anticipations of the future, and that's something to hold on to with tremendous appreciation. So that's in terms of the Haftarah. So maybe just to say a few words about Rosh Hashanah. So again, I don't recall what we spoke about the last year, so forgive me if it was a similar theme, I don't remember. But I guess one question to try to understand is, what is the theme, what is the atmosphere on Rosh Hashanah? Now, we know that the Jewish New Year is observed very, very differently than the civil New Year. It doesn't take much experience in shul to appreciate that the observance of January 1st is radically different than the observance of Tishrei the 1st. But what's an appropriate question to ask is there any similarity down to the expression Happy New Year? So on January 1st, people say Happy New Year. Is that appropriate on Tishrei the 1st? Probably not as much, but it's not a crazy question, because we know that on Yontif there is an obligation of Simcha. So is there an obligation of Simcha on Rosh Hashanah also? So that's a question that's not clear. It was debated by Achronim, notably the Shagas Aryeh, and the Or Sameach, and several others, who posed this question, is there a chiyuv Simcha on Rosh Hashanah? So why would I say yes, there is a chiyuv Simcha? Well, it seems like a yantif, right? That's what you're going to say. So, yantif, we have a mitzvah of simcha, v'samachta b'chagecha. And it's also a hopeful time. It's a time when we would like to believe we're going to be given a new slate. We know that the Gemara tells us that Yom Kippur is one of the two happiest days of the year, and that's the one that's more obvious than the other one. So maybe it makes sense to say Happy New Year. On the other hand, there are indications that it's not a time of Simcha. From a halachic perspective, in terms of Simcha's Yontif, so it's the regalim, Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos, that have the Shalmei Simcha. So there we know we have a chiyuv of Simchas Yontif. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is not as obvious. And in terms of mood, so it is an intense time, and we call it Yom Hadin. So if we are in such a state of anxiety over our judgment, so how are we supposed to be celebrating and happy at the same time? So that's a question that's asked. What is Rosh Hashanah? Yom Kippur as well, but we're focusing here on Rosh Hashanah. Is Rosh Hashanah a day when there is a mitzvah of Simcha? Or is it not? Is it distinct from the Regalim? The Regalim, we have Simcha. Rosh Hashanah is not about Simcha. So, as we mentioned, the Achronim raised this question, and it's not obvious. You have to try to investigate to figure it out. So what's the first clue? What would you do if you want to know, is there a mitzvah of Simcha on a certain day or not? So how would that manifest itself halachically? What would you look at? Oh, let's go to food first. Right. So is there an obligation to eat basar v'yayin or to eat anything on Rosh Hashanah? Is Rosh Hashanah a time when you are obligated to eat? Or conversely, is it a time when there is a prohibition to fast? So what's the story? Yeah? Right, we did allude to it a little bit yesterday. So what's the answer? Yes, no? Well, what's always the safest answer? Machlokes! So that's the safe answer here also, but not as safe as you want it to be, because normally we say machlokes, okay, there's two opinions. Here, there are no fewer than six opinions on this question. So there must be at least five Jews involved. So the six, you know, two Jews, three opinions, so we're talking about five Jews. Or maybe, well, I guess you can have four Jews, I think, according to the formula. So what are the six opinions? So the six opinions are, you may fast, you may not fast, and you should fast. Those are three. There's another opinion that you can fast only the second day, which is both more understandable and more baffling, because the second day is not Daraisa, it's not Rosh Chodesh, but it's also not Yom HaDin, you would think. So it's interesting why the whole concept of Yom Tov Sheni Yom HaDin is a fascinating one. Maybe we'll have some opportunity to explore that. But in any event, so that's a shita. And there's also a shita you can fast half a day, which is helpful, because when it comes to Shabbos, we're not supposed to fast even half a day. And that makes things difficult, because we have to make sure to eat before Chatzos. So on Rosh Hashanah, it'd be even more difficult, because shul is much longer, and it would be harder to get out of shul and make kiddush before Chatzos. So to not have that pressure is actually helpful. So that's another opinion. You can fast half a day. And there's also a sixth opinion that major tzaddikim can fast, but the average person should not. So, among those six opinions, what I think is most interesting, or most mysterious for our purposes, is the idea that you can fast. If you want to tell me that you have to fast, okay. If you want to tell me that I may not fast, like other Yom Tovim, I hear that too. To say that it's somewhere in between, I can fast if I want to. So that really requires some explanation. And this whole discussion takes us no further than we were before. So we didn't know if there is simcha, and now we have six different directions. So what does the Shulchan Aruch say? The Shulchan Aruch says that Ochlin v'sholsin l'smeichim, eat, drink, and be merry on Rosh Hashanah. So, case closed. We went to the Shulchan Aruch and it's done. Not so fast, because there are other places to look which may confuse us a little bit. What else might be relevant to the question of whether it's Simchas Yontif or not? What about how we phrase our tefillos? Do we say V'Hasienu on Rosh Hashanah? Do we recite Sasun and Simcha Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah? So what's the story there? Machlokes, right? So the Torah quotes the Machlokes on this point. And here the Shulchan Aruch rules that we do not use the phrase Sasun and Simcha on Rosh Hashanah. So we seem to now have a stira. So on the one hand, as far as eating, it was Ofen V'Shosun Smechem. And as far as the language we use, we're told not to say sasun and simcha. So let's look for some more clues. So what's another possible clue? So what about hallel? Right, that's a good clue. We say hallel on happy days. Do we say hallel on Rosh Hashanah? Oh, okay, so does that settle the issue? No, because the Gemara gives us a little bit of a mixed message about it. The Gemara tells us that the Jews are criticized, that they can't even be bothered to say hallel on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that God defends us. And he says, well, what do you expect? That Melach, Malchei HaMelachim, Yoshev al Kiseh HaDin, But here, the King of Kings is sitting on the seat of judgment. V'sifrei Mesim, v'sifrei Chayim, psuchim lefanav. And the Book of Life and the Book of Death is open in front of him. You really think they're going to be able to say Shira in such an atmosphere? So, how does that Gemara sound? Sorry? It sounds Yira, right? But so, how does it sound on the Simcha question? So, I don't know if it's a no, because it seems like the impression is that we should have said Hallel, but it's actually understandable that we can't, because there's something muting it, there's something getting in the way. That on the one hand, Hallel would have fit, but we're also filled with anxiety, so therefore that impacts. And how would it look when somebody's on trial and he starts the celebration before the jury has had a chance to think about things? It's not going to create such a positive message. So the Gemara is not going to really be conclusive for us. And it's interesting, if you look at the Rambam, so the Rambam formulates things differently, and that's an interesting discussion that he has. He says the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, he lists off all the days when we say Chanukah throughout the year. He says, we say Chanukah on Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuos and Chanukah, there's but not on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because they are days of Eima and Yira and Pachad, and not days of Simcha Yisera. We were so close. He almost gave us an answer, and then that last word messes it up, right? So they're not days of Simcha that much. So they are, they aren't. What's the story? The Brisker Rav has a comment here that apparently what the Rambam is conveying to us is that there's a threshold of Simcha for Hallel. You have to reach a certain level, and on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we're not fully there. We are happy somewhat, but that's not enough for Hallel. You have to, there's a happiness meter, like they're talking about now, but different countries to measure how happy they are. So for Hallel, you have to hit a certain threshold on the happiness meter, and Rosh Hashanah doesn't cut it. Hi.
But doesn't Sukkot also have like a Simcha Yetera at the exclusion of...
I mean, you say Sukkot, yes, and the other one's not?
What's that?
Say only Sukkot has a Simcha Yetera.
Right.
Yes, it's got a Yetera, Yetera. And it's maximum, according to Brisker Rav's Cheshbon, it'll go past the point and way past it. It'll be maximal. But it doesn't mean the other ones are not going to be eligible. But basically, all our clues have left us high and dry. Right? So we tried to consider the question of the Chi of Suda, and we found six different opinions, and the Shulchan Aruch saying, Ochel Rishos Nesmechem. And we looked to the question of Nusach HaTfilah, and we found the Machlokas again, and the Shulchan Aruch saying, don't say Sosin Nesmechem. And then we looked to Hallel, and we know that we don't say Hallel, but we saw the Gemara giving us the impression that it's kind of a tension, that we should say, but we can't say. And the Rambam is saying, we don't say, but it doesn't mean there's no Simcha, it means there's not enough Simcha. So what path can we navigate through this? So we could build upon a statement of Rav Shammai Kahatz Gross, who's one of the Dayanim and Bells, the author of the Shilas and Tshuvas, Shevet HaKahasi, where he considers this language of the Shulchan Aruch, that we don't say Sasan and Simcha. And he points to an interpretation of the Vilna Gaon that the Gra explained in his commentary to Megillas Esther. That what is the difference between Sasan and Simcha? It's two words that we use together. What do they mean precisely? So there are different explanations you can find in different places as to what the distinction is between Sasan and Simcha. The Vilna Gaon's perspective here is that sason is an intense joy in the moment, while simcha is not necessarily like that. Simcha is a more sustained sense of contentment and satisfaction. So I think to give a muscle, you could say that if you were eating a good steak, that would be sason. if somebody gave you a gift certificate that you'll have a free steak for every night for the rest of your life, that would be simple. You're not necessarily enjoying it right now, but that sense of contentment you'd have from knowing it's there all the time, so that would be a state of simcha. So says Shiva Akahasi that he thinks that in Rosh Hashanah there is a din of simcha, but not sasa. So that's in contrast to the regalim, Rosh Hashanah and that Sukkot and Pesach and Shavuos. They have obligations of the full package of sasa and simcha. So that's one kind of atmosphere. You have to be happy in the moment. While Rosh Hashanah is different. Rosh Hashanah is also a positive day, but it's a different kind of positive day. It's a day where there is a sense of satisfaction and of confidence in what the future year will bring. And that's a very positive feeling, but it's not rejoicing and celebrating right now like you have by the three regalim. So that could help us to understand the attitude towards the Chiyuv Suda. That the notion of eating on Yantif for the sake of Simchas Yantif is, on the one hand, a mitzvah, but it's not your normal kind of mitzvah. And as Rasloveitchik explained here in another context, that it is one of a handful of examples where you have a kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, is separate from the action that we do to bring about that kiyum. Then when it comes to Simchas Yantif, the real mitzvah is an attitude, is an emotion of happiness. But the Torah does not command emotions in this understanding. Doesn't tell us just to turn on and off our feelings, but rather commands us in mitzvos. So it tells us what to do, and the hope is that those actions will correlate to the sought-after emotions. So Simchas Yantif translates practically into having a festive meal. The meal is a means to an end that is going to bring about the attitude of Simcha. So when it comes to the regalim, so we have to have enjoyment in the moment. So you can't fast on the regalim because that is going to be a contradiction to the attitude of sasam that is required. On Rosh Hashanah, we're aiming for something positive, but it's a different kind of positive. So for the most part, yes, having a nice meal and having some festivity of that sort will contribute to the positive perspective that Rosh Hashanah asks for. But it's still a means to an end, and it's slightly different than the regalim, and that may make a difference. So we find that when it comes to Shabbos, for example, so Shabbos, we're not allowed to fast, we're obligated to eat. That's for a different reason. That's because of the concept of oneg. We have to make Shabbos into a pleasant atmosphere. And it's hard to imagine it's going to be such a pleasant atmosphere if we're not able to eat. So if you're fasting, you can't have a real feeling of oneg. So therefore, you have to eat on Shabbos. However, there could be an exception. The Gemara says in Masechet Tannis that if somebody had a bad dream and they're very concerned about the implications of the bad dream, so the Gemara recommends that there should be a fast. The Gemara says that Yofa Tainus L'Chalom Ke'esh L'Na'oris, that a fast is very effective to deal with the consequences of the bad dream, and it should take place immediately that day. So if somebody has a bad dream Tuesday night, it should fast on Wednesday morning. And if somebody has a bad dream Friday night, should fast on Shabbos as well. Although it's not perfect, the Gemara says that eventually he'll have to do atonement for that. He'll have to take on a tainus for taking on a tainus on Shabbos. He'll have to atone for his atonement. It's like people come back from a vacation all exhausted and they say they need a vacation from their vacation. So here you'll need an atonement from your atonement. But nonetheless, that's the recommended path. So, Mefarshim explained, what's this idea of fasting on Shabbos for a Tainus Chalot? That eating on Shabbos is a way of preserving Oneg, of preserving a pleasant atmosphere. So for 99.9% of all people, fasting will not help Oneg, and eating is what we need. But there could be an exception. If you have somebody who is so worked up because they had a bad dream and they think it represents something, so then they're going to be very anxiety-filled if they're left to live with that over the course of Shabbos. So for those people, to be able to fast will be more of an oneg than eating will be, because the fasting will help feel like the dream situation is being addressed, and therefore that is more of an oneg than eating in this minority situation. So too when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. That Rosh Hashanah, we're not looking for a regal atmosphere, it's not sukkahs, it's not shavuos, but we are looking for a positive atmosphere, one that reflects that we have confidence in the process of din. So for most people, having a meal will be conducive to that. But you can imagine somebody who it won't be so conducive for. That maybe somebody is very concerned about their tshuva process, and they feel that if they're able to fast on Rosh Hashanah and allow that to advance their tshuva, so then that will put them in the right frame of mind, the right kind of simcha for Rosh Hashanah. But eating is not necessarily going to help them. So that could explain this mysterious shita out of the sixth, the one we wanted to focus on, this in-between position that doesn't say you must fast, doesn't say you can't fast, but says that you may, that you can. So perhaps that's what it's reflecting, that the normal means to the atmosphere of Rosh Hashanah would be eating. But for some people, to feel like their tshuva needs it, the atmosphere will be helped more by fasting than for eating. So this is something to think about on Rosh Hashanah, because like we said yesterday, just to quickly repeat it, that we have this notion that the Aseres and the Tshuva are supposed to be days of fasting, and that's why we advanced the Sukkos 4 days up to the Ashkenazim, because we want 10 days of Tshuva, and 4 of the days are non-fastable days, assuming in this count that you don't fast on Rosh Hashanah, that's 2, and Erev Yom Kippur and Shabbos, so that takes 4 days out, so we have to pull the calendar back and get 4 extra days. And we mentioned yesterday that this is a very significant message in 2 ways. One is that it reminds us that the Aseres Me'Tshuva is not simply the space to fill in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but rather it is an actual process of tshuva, that there actually is a notion that we want to invest 10 days in this process of growth. And if we can't fit it all in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so then we have to pull back a few days in order to get 10 full days. And that the notion is that they should be fastable days. So even though most of us are not fasting on those days, with the exception of the 2, but the other 8 days we probably will not be fasting. But we should keep this in mind, the idea that it's meant to be a day where we are actively using it for the sake of advancing our tshuva, and that for many people, at least historically, fasting was a way to charge and to give meaning to this process of tshuva. So for us, it may not be the most effective route. Having 2 weeks of slichas and fasting, I think, would totally knock us out. But whatever does contribute to a more effective avoda of a Kadosh Baruch Hu during these days, and a more effective path towards growth, it's our achrayus, it's our responsibility to try to think, what is it going to take in order to do that, what is meaningful for us as individuals? What is it that will bring us out of our comfort zone and into a zone of growth and a area in which we become that which we can maximally be at this point in our lives? Shouldn't even say fulfill our potential, because God willing, will have many, many years to have even greater potential. But the potential right now, who you're meant to be today, God willing, you'll maximize that, and then next month you'll have a greater potential to live up to. But the potential that you have for now, we have to see what it takes to create the atmosphere to cultivate that. And that is very much the avodah of this time of year as we go into Rosh Hashanah and as we look towards the rest of Tishrei. So with that, I wish everyone a year of bracha, a year of aliyah, a year of hatzlacha, a year of simcha, a year of tshuva, a year of all positive things, and kobile demetav, to borrow a phrase from the first parak of Bava Kamma. And God willing, I will see you all next year. All right. Have a good Shabbos first. Before that. So do that as well.